ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's the eve of the lunar flyby, and the excitement on board is palpable.
You know, I'm not one for hyperbole, but it's the only thing I can come up with. This is incredible.
Kathy Moonjoy.
The Artemis astronauts are now in the moon's gravitational clutches.
And will very soon make history when they fly around it. I'm ABC science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily podcast following the Artemis 2 mission to the moon
for science fiction on ABC Radio National.
All right, Jacinta, you know what to do. Give me mission under a minute.
Today's an exciting day. Okay, so they jumped into their big orange suits for a little check. That was quite a few hours, actually. There's been a mystery smell, and they have really struggled to find out what's going on there. They're obviously getting ready for the big day tomorrow. Everything's riding on this. It's super exciting. And finally, they place some dehydrated scrambled eggs around the cabin to celebrate Easter.
As like an Easter egg hunt?
Yeah, as an Easter egg hunt.
It's disappointing that they don't get chocolate.
They do have some chocolate. I did find out their desserts do include chocolate occasionally.
Okay.
But I imagine that they just have more scrambled eggs to hide.
Right. Okay.
We did hide a few eggs around the cabin. They were the dehydrated scrambled egg variety, but we're all pretty happy with them.
That's wonderful. We'll keep an eye out.
So we're coming up to the flyby. What's the vibe like inside the Orion capsule?
They are so excited about this. So the moon's getting closer and closer to the astronauts, and they can see more and more. And as they're seeing more and more of parts of the moon that humans have not really looked at before with their own eyes, it is really incredible, and they're so excited.
Just seeing Tycho, there's mountains to the north. You can see Copernicus, Rainier Gamma. It's just everything from the training, but in three dimension and absolutely unbelievable.
All right, so the astronauts are getting closer to the moon. If we want to follow along at home, when do I need to set my alarm?
Yeah, so it is unfortunately quite early for us. We've been doing quite well. We've been able to kind of get up at a reasonable time most of the time, but tomorrow is not one of those days. At about 4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard, they're going to pass the Apollo 13 distance record, and then the flyby begins at 4:45 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard. As they get closer and closer, this is a long flyby. This is going to take about 7 hours to do. So the closest they're going to be is at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern, and then the lunar observation period ends at 11:20 a.m.
So what will we be able to see from here on Earth?
Quite a lot, actually. So what's going to be happening, NASA currently has a number of feeds on their YouTube channel. So we've been watching these the last few days. That's actually going to ramp up even more tomorrow. So you'll be able to see outside the capsule, you'll be able to see the actual moon as they're doing the flyby. You'll also be able to see the astronauts. However, it will be quite dark in there because they're going to be turning the lights off to make sure that they can see the moon in its best view. And you'll also be able to see the scientists back on Earth. And I imagine they're going to be so jazzed tomorrow. The peak of their life is probably watching this feed.
Talk about moon joy. It's going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, there's going to be a chunk of time where we'll lose the signal from the Orion capsule. How long will that be, and why does that happen?
So, yes, they are going to be going around the moon. And although our communication is getting really good, the fact that we can watch this live is incredible. But, you know, our communication systems still don't go through a moon. There's a point where the moon will be in between Orion and us, and that's going to last about 41 minutes from 8:44 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. So from that time, there won't be a live feed. But then after that, it'll come back up again and we'll be able to continue seeing what they've been up to.
And I heard this morning in the news briefing that the ANU receiver will finally be used.
Yes, yes.
Over the next day or so.
Yes. So good news for the ANU guys. We are on board there. It actually happens overnight, which makes sense. A lot of the data comes back while the astronauts are sleeping. And so that will be happening. Yeah, ANU's Australia's on the line. I'm excited. It's all happening.
We also found out today a little bit more about what the astronauts will be actually looking for during the flyby. Can you walk me through a bit of that?
So this is a 7-hour period. There's going to be a lot of stuff that they're going to be able to look at here. During the flyby, the astronauts are going to do, there's going to be one person with a camera and one person that's kind of looking at it with their eyes and taking notes. And then halfway through, they're going to swap. So the two that aren't doing that are going to jump in and do that. And there's also about an hour off during the flyby. This is just so that they don't overburden them. That's a long time 7 hours is a long time to be staring at something.
So the scientist of the hour is Dr. Kelsey Young. She's the lead for NASA's lunar science objectives. And she detailed exactly what's going to be happening during the flyby.
As they progress through the several hour period where the moon is illuminated, they'll continue to work through that targeting plan. Again, each target is based on our lunar science objectives, and they'll be able to see how the moon is changing throughout their time observing it. The longer they look at the moon, the more their eyes adjust and the more they're able to discern. So we wanted to allow time per target for them to settle into that observation, because ultimately that's going to deliver the most science.
So the other thing they're looking at is potential landing sites for future missions. So NASA's identified 9 potential landing sites. And so the astronauts will be looking at these to get an understanding of whether they can tell whether one would be better than the other. Interestingly, they're looking at the South Pole. They're looking at areas to be able to land that are different to where it was in the Apollo missions.
Why the South Pole? Why is that the sort of primo posse for landing?
One of the big reasons they're looking at the South Pole is because that might be an area where there is water. There is water on the lunar surface, not the way that we think of water. There's not like, you know, lakes and stuff, but there is water molecules, you know, throughout the dirt. However, because of the way the moon works, there may be icy deposits below the surface at the South Pole. And so if they can access that, it will make moon missions significantly easier because they'll have the water there instead of having to cart it all the way over from Earth.
And then towards the very, very end of the flyby observation period, the astronauts are going to see an eclipse.
Yeah, what a great little finale as they leave. So yes, the team will see a solar eclipse from their perspective. So the sun will go behind the moon and they'll be in darkness for nearly an hour. And that's as they come back round the back. They should be able to see Earth at this point, just not the sun.
So the moon will be backlit, essentially.
The moon will be backlit,
yeah. Amazing. Now, we've had a question from Frank who asks, Jacinta, you mentioned in Saturday's episode that you were looking up at the full moon and called to mind the astronauts heading over there. Just wondering, was it a pure coincidence or do you have to travel up to the moon when it is full?
It's not a coincidence. You don't have to travel up there when it's full, but in this case they have. One of the mission objectives was to see the far side of the moon, as we've been talking about. The moon is tidally locked, which means one side always faces the Earth. It's always the same side. This also means that the sun stays on the same part of the moon for much longer periods of time. It very slowly goes around the moon as it moves. So we left at a full moon because by the time the astronauts arrived, it's a waning gibbous, and therefore more of the far side would be illuminated for better viewing. Now, it's not the only reason that they went at that particular time, but it is an interesting one, and it would have been sad if the astronauts hadn't been able to see the far side of the moon at all.
So it's timed, the launch was timed so that when the astronauts reached the moon and flew around the back, it would be illuminated a bit by the sun.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, something else that's happened over the past day is the Orion capsule has entered the lunar sphere of influence. Now, I'm loving the fact that the moon is an influencer, but what does it mean in this particular instance?
Okay, yeah. So the Earth is a very big rock and it has a gravitational pull attached to it. That's why we don't all float away when we jump. But the moon has one as well. Otherwise, the Apollo astronauts, when they were on the moon, they would have jumped and just kept going all the way back to Earth. The lunar sphere of influence is when the gravity from the moon becomes stronger than the gravity from our planet, particularly on the Orion capsule. So it has reached the point where the moon's gravity is taking over it from the Earth's.
Okay, so it's sort of captured in the moon's gravitational pull.
Yes.
But it's still experiencing the gravitational pull from Earth.
Yes, for sure. Yes, the Earth is still quite strong and it only happens quite close to when they get to the moon as well.
And why is it important that they get in the lunar sphere of influence?
If there wasn't a lunar sphere of influence, obviously there is, right? The moon does have gravity. But if it wasn't there, they would just shoot past it and just keep going deeper into space, which is obviously not what we want for our 10-day mission. That would be a much longer mission because you'd have to get back again.
And this leads quite nicely into a question that we got from Eris, who's aged 5. Very insightful question. How does Artemis stay in the moon's orbit after speeding up and going so fast? Yeah, they're travelling so quickly towards the moon. Do they have to slam on the brakes or something?
Oh, that's such a good question. So, no. And speed is one of those things. We think about making sure that you go in the right direction. You need to be going exactly the way that you need to be going. But speed is also a very, very, very important part of this, because if you go too fast, you wouldn't do a full U-turn around the moon. You'd kind of just do a smaller turn, like maybe like a right-hand turn, and then just keep going off to the side, which is definitely not what you want to do. But if you go too slow, and you'd end up trapped in the gravity of the moon and then just keep orbiting around it. So the speed that they've gone is specifically calibrated so that they will do the perfect little U-turn and then head back to Earth. If they were at the wrong speed, this would not work.
Okay, so it's a very, very deliberate speed that they're heading towards the moon.
Absolutely. It does get slower as well. Because there's gravity, you do get slower as you head towards the moon, and then they'll speed up again slightly when they go round.
Okay. We have some more listener questions, and a very popular one is about space junk. So we had Olivia, Craig and Sergey, who have all asked how the Artemis spacecraft avoided hitting any satellites and space junk as it launched from Earth last week.
So it's actually really hard to avoid space junk, which is interesting in itself. So there's lots of things that NASA have to check before, you know, the rocket goes up. Temperature, wind, solar weather, all of those things. But with over 10,000 Starlink satellites alone, there's actually a lot of space objects to avoid as they're going up as well. So you might remember that on the launch day, they had a 2-hour window to go up in. So at any point during those 2 hours, they could go up. And there's reasons for that. But one of the reasons is that there's no satellites or junk in that area at that time that could potentially cause damage. Interestingly, this is likely to get harder as more and more satellites end up in space. The window is likely to get shorter to launch astronauts to the moon.
So how do the NASA people track all the stuff that's flying around the Earth?
So they use something called the US Space Surveillance Network. We have a very good understanding of what is currently in space and where, particularly because you need to know to make sure that satellites don't collide, that space junk doesn't collide. It does occasionally happen, but it happens a lot less than you would think because we are tracking all of these objects in orbit.
But there'll be some bits up there that are really, really, really small, like, I don't know, a few millimetres across that you maybe won't be able to track using this space surveillance network. So what happens with those?
The spacecraft is designed so that a fleck of paint or a tiny, tiny little micrometeorite wouldn't cause an issue. So they should be able to just deal with that. It shouldn't cause any problems, even at those really high speeds. But anything bigger than that, yeah, you really want to make sure it's being tracked so it doesn't accidentally hit your very expensive, very important rocket.
And we've also had a question from Nina about life in the cozy space capsule. She asks, oh, this is a good one, how are smells controlled in the cabin? Is there a filter system to clean the air, or are they just marinating in smell for the entire 10 days?
Look, they are mostly marinating. As I said earlier, space is not a glamorous business. So there is a filter. If there wasn't, then they would just get moister and moister in there as the astronauts continuously breathe out over the 10 days. So they definitely have ways of being able to filter the air. They've also got tanks of nitrogen and oxygen to make sure that they're at safe breathing levels. But that's just not going to remove all the smells. Like, you can't open a window. Luckily, there are a few things that they've tried to do to limit this. One of the big ones, their bin bags and their poo canisters have special odor-reducing objects inside of them. I still think it's going to be pretty smelly up there. But luckily, when you're in space, you can just smell less. Sinuses get pretty blocked up when gravity is lowered, so you don't smell as intently as you do on Earth, but they can still smell. We know this because we've had a mystery smell issue in space.
Yeah. Speaking of, what is this mystery smell we've been hearing about a lot lately?
Yeah. So today it was all about the mystery smell. It's coming from the toilet, but it's not what you think.
Uh-huh. Too many tortillas. Righto.
No. Leave the tortillas alone. They've got 58 of them. We need to work out how many are left.
Mm.
So the astronauts noted that it's a burning heater smell, but they can't work out what seems to be going wrong with it. So the toilet is making a kind of burny smell that you really don't want electronics to have.
Yeah, well, they said, I read somewhere that they were saying it's like when you've got an electric heater that hasn't been switched on for a while and you turn it on, it's that initial kind of like unused heater stank that they're getting from somewhere.
Yeah. Mission Control are trying very hard to work out what this is. They have done a bunch of different checks today. Fingers crossed it's not a big deal. It doesn't seem to be. According to Rick Henfling, the Artemis 2 entry flight director, we're continuing to proceed with the mission. Mm. So that's good.
It was definitely in the hygiene bay. And when I opened up the hygiene bay, the rest of the crew could smell it pretty much immediately.
Yeah, so now they have to go in with headphones because it's too loud, and they probably have to hold their nose because it's really smelly. Eventually, they're not going to be able to do anything. They'll have to close their eyes as well.
Yeah. The lights will go out.
Yeah.
Something else will happen. Well, this is exactly the kind of thing that this mission aims to do, right? Find these little issues that may arise and deal with them so that when they do go back to the moon or maybe in longer missions, these are things they don't have to think about because they've been fixed already.
Absolutely. You really don't want your toilet breaking on a year-long mission to Mars.
Toilets smell enough. They don't need some extra insulation off-gassing in there as well. Now, we're loving all these questions, so please keep them coming. sciencefriction@abc.net.au. And we'll be back tomorrow to talk about how the flyby went.
Okay, copy. Thank you for the observation.
This episode was produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and produced by Shelby Traynor. I'm Belinda Smith.
And I'm Jacinta Bowler. Toodaloo.